Welcome, friends, to Agency Wellness, the podcast. My name is Cody Marr. After decades living with the diagnosis of chronic illness, I began to ask myself if this diagnosis, this label, was really helpful. I started to challenge my own learned concepts as well as cultural concepts of what it means to be well. I spent years studying all sorts of techniques and experimenting with different modalities. I took course after course and certification after certification. All of this amazing knowledge has enriched my life and informed how I care for myself and who I am as a practitioner. However, my greatest teacher and my most credible source has been and continues to be my own amazing body. Agency Wellness was born out of the feeling that just like actors need agents to support and guide their careers, sometimes in the wild, wild world of wellness, you need a health agent. Someone you can trust to help you navigate the various twists and forks and bumps you inevitably encounter as a human living in today's world who wants to feel well, be well, who wants to be, let's just say it, happy and healthy. This podcast will help you expand your knowledge, vision, and practice of wellness. I'll be bringing you heartfelt conversations with a variety of experts in fields such as naturopathic medicine, feng shui, life coaching, womb healing, psychic guidance, creativity, Pilates, and so much more. It's my hope and intention that from these conversations, you can begin to tap into your own unique and ever-evolving wellness recipe. I'll be right here with you the whole way. So let's dive in. This week on Agency Wellness, I am excited and honored to welcome Amanda Gibby Peters. She is the voice and visionary of Simple Shui, a modern-day, mission-driven, love-based practice of feng shui. She's been teaching feng shui techniques and tips for over a decade, witnessing the breathtaking life transformations of her readers and clients. She has a background in communications, she used to work on the Hill, and has been called the Martha Stewart of feng shui. Her superpower is making complex, ethereal ideas tangible, fun, and life-changing. Her work has been featured on Architectural Digest, My Domain, Food 52, Lonnie, Mind Body Green, Well and Good, and Amazon. She was also recently named one of Instagram's best feng shui accounts by The Spruce for her vibrant and innovative influence on creating positive spaces. Amanda is Dallas-based with an international clientele where she lives with her husband, twin daughters, and their rescue dog, Ruby. I've had the pleasure of working one-on-one with Amanda, taking many of her classes, and she is simply amazing. So please, friends, join me in welcoming Amanda to the podcast. Welcome, Amanda. I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me into your space.
Yeah. And I'm really excited to have a conversation around wellness and feng shui, because even though they're even though they're in the wellness vein together, I feel like a lot of times when you hear feng shui conversations, it's all about like how to get the relationship you want or how to boost your creativity, which are so amazing. And I love those conversations, but I'm really curious for this to sort of frame it around wellness and our bodies and our health and that conversation. So thanks so much for being willing to dive into that with me.
Totally.
Before we go there though, let's start with just a little bit about you, letting people know who you are, how you got into this, what was your life like before, and that all those things.
Oh my gosh, that's a long story. So let's just do the really quick version of it.
Sure.
I was not anywhere near this arena feng shui practitioner life. I actually was, I went to school in political science, got my master's in communication. I worked on the Hill. I worked for a lot of nonprofits, ended up having twins in the early 2000s, which put me in a unique situation. Our twins, the pregnancy had complications, things like that. And so I ended up being home. They were actually under a quarantine of their own for a couple of years because they had been born so early. So they didn't have very strong immune systems. And in that period, my husband's job transferred him. We were living in Utah at the time. We were transferred back to Texas, which is where I'm from originally. And, you know, we were in this new to us town, new to us home. And he was gone all the time. The girls were really young. It was a lot of change, a lot of stress, and, you know, nothing seemed to be working like it had previously. And I sort of just chalked everything up to, this is just a lot to digest. We're in that space of change, which is always challenging and turbulent. But after, I would say like 6 months, I was realizing it was just getting worse. Like the energy was just continuing to siphon. And so I grabbed a book, thought in my head, whatever I see is going to be my answer. It was feng shui. I remember thinking it was really silly because we had just moved, you know, this definition that I came across said, you know, change your home and you'll change your life. Mm. I didn't make the connection like, oh, maybe that's exactly what went wrong. I thought because we had gotten a home with, you know, better upgrades and more space and all these things, just kind of how we're fed, you know, through society and culture. I thought, oh, this better house should have led to better things. But it did intrigue me enough that I thought, you know, I'm going to try it and this will be a really great thing to blog about. But my initial intention was I'm going to blog about how it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of how I went into it. Very skeptical, very, you know, like I'm going to apply my very illogical, cerebral thinking to this very abstract, mystical practice. And what happened, I always tell people, you know, it's not, this practice isn't transactional, as you know. It's not do something today, tomorrow something happens. That occasionally can happen and surprise and delight you. But really what I find and what I found was I kept feeling pulled along to do something else. And so in this attempt to dismantle a wisdom that's thousands of years old, I just kept finding myself thinking, well, I could do that now. I could do that. And they were little things. They were never big, elaborate, cost exhaustive changes. They were just very practical to me, common sense in some ways, changes to make around our home. But what was really interesting was after several months of doing this, there were some big changes that had taken place in our lives. And I didn't feel comfortable any longer calling them coincidences. Mm-hmm. There was a point where I recognized like, something's happening here and I can keep doing this from sort of that skeptical standpoint, or I can get serious and become a student. And that's really what got me on this path.
Amazing. Yeah. And before this, like growing up, did you have any influence, you know, was your family spiritual or were they into, you know, I know you were a neat and tidy child. Mm-hmm. So there was something in you that was already seeing how keeping a space a certain way had a certain result, right? So that was already coming in at a young age. But I guess more of the question is, as you got into feng shui, were you able to look back and be like, oh, this was with me much earlier? Or is it something that you really feel came in for you at this time?
I think it was sort of a moment where all of the roads that I'd been on sort of merged. So, you know, you bring up being neat as a child. I just was, you know, I remember my dad sitting me down. I shared this on my site, but yeah. I remember my dad sitting me down when I was 8, I think, and saying, hey, listen, if you would just clean your room up during the week, you wouldn't have to do this whole haul every Saturday, you know, because I was so like put out, like, why do I have to do all of this work? And I've got, you know, playing and fun and Barbieing to do, and you're totally cramping my buzz here, man. And he explained this and it just clicked. I also think that very early on, I realized that there was something to being organized and efficient that just allowed me to do more things. Like it built from there. I'm the firstborn. I really used to be so type A. I still have some of those tendencies, but I think those played well to it. And then I also think that, you know, there were a lot of experiences in my life where I recognized I had a gut feeling about something. And when I listened to it, it was right. Now, you know, when I came to feng shui, this was early, this was like early 2000s. And so I wasn't like The Secret and all these things, which seems so mainstream now, were not, you know, this just wasn't around. And so I was still playing with this whole, where does intention or where does intuition fit in? We didn't have a lot of conversations about that percolating at the time. But right before I got into feng shui, you know, I just mentioned that we had our girls and we had, you know, this complication, and essentially the complication that we had wasn't something that they could fix. And the doctors were telling us, you know, these babies aren't going to make it. This is a really rare complication. There's no way they're going to make it. And so that entire pregnancy, which I had the girls at 30 weeks, so they were 10 weeks early, but they had said, there's no way. And if you do make it, they're only going to make it to 24 weeks. And then we're going to take them because they can't survive inside. And then you're going to be faced with all of these other host of challenges, right? So one of the most powerful lessons I got in intention was from that pregnancy, because we had to go to the doctor every day to have ultrasounds. And I would come home and I'd write all of the details of just how, you know, just things were not looking great. And here are the complications now. And here's what they said. And I would kind of just purge. But every entry, Cody, every single day I wrote, you know, if they're going to make it, they're going to make it to 30 weeks and they're going to be healthy and thriving. And literally the 30th week to the day was when they were born. That got my attention. That turned everything for me in terms of the power of intention and being able to take in information, run it through your own filter, but then also make your own decisions or sort of be your own advocate. Mm. And so that shows up with me every time I have a conversation about feng shui. I don't share that story a ton, but that shows up with me. So I had this understanding of, oh, when you take care of your space, it feels better. There's something that's heightened in your own, like how you're showing up, what you're delivering to the world, how you're engaging with other people, just how you feel. And then this intuition and intention, definitely. And so when I say all these worlds sort of merge, that's what I mean. There was just like, okay. And so learning feng shui just became really, when I think back to it, it was a language that I already knew. I just didn't understand how to share or speak it. And so it just felt very natural to me. And it just was a missing piece. Hmm.
Thank you so much. There's so much wisdom in there. So I really hope that people can hear. I mean, we could kind of end the conversation now. We absolutely will not, but people, I think one of the questions that comes up a lot in the wellness space is about finding your purpose and how it's like this whole big thing. And sometimes it's just about following and trusting yourself and feeling what's right. So thank you so much for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to talk a little bit, you know, the thing that drew me to you so much, I've worked with a couple different feng shui practitioners because I've been interested in this for a long time. But I always kind of worked with them and felt a lot of contraction and tension and like I was doing it wrong in my body and then stopped because it felt overwhelming. And when I started working with you, it was the opposite. I felt this expansion and this empowerment and this ability to sort of be free and make it my own. And I think that that is a real gift that you're bringing to both the wellness world and your own industry of not having it something be a discipline or a prescription, but having it expand you. And that's kind of, you know, I think we're aligned in that because that's what I'm doing in my own work as well. So I want to talk a little bit about intention and the role of intention. And you say on your website, you say, the journey begins with one question: what do you want from life? And I don't see this often in other feng shui about starting with your own intention. So can you just talk to us a little bit about how you approach someone who's just coming into feng shui and they don't necessarily know what they want?
Well, I mean, I think that the reason why I say intention matters is because, you know, having done this as long as I have, one of the things I can say with 100% conviction is everyone shows up with different expectations. People think, oh, I'm going to find true love. I'm going to get the better job. I'm going to get that windfall. You know, there's a lot of things that we are sort of fed to believe that we want. But without fail, after I've had one, maybe two conversations with anyone, even if I'm answering a question in, you know, on the DMs or whatever, what people want immediately becomes so nuanced and specific and unique to them. Like once they feel the potential, they get hyper specific. And so that's why the intention matters, right? Because when we do things out of ambiguity, we're going to probably get ambiguous results. That doesn't mean then to flip to the other side of it, which is do things where you're basically strangling the how of it. And like, this is what it has to look like. And if anything else shows up, no, thank you. I have a lot of those clients too, right? If it doesn't look and talk and smell like what they think it needs to, they're like, no. But it's knowing that I'm energetically involved in the conversation.
Right.
That's the intention. And so you are, you know, you are aligning yourself then through that intention with everything that you're doing in your space to sort of create the most optimal environment for that circumstance or opportunity to present.
Amazing. That's really helpful to clarify. Thank you. So we have this picture of who the person is when they approach feng shui and what's important for them to have this clear intention. And one of the other things I love is thinking of your home, your space, as an extension of you, as a part of your family, as a thing that lives and breathes with you. So can you talk to us a little bit about how that has changed for you, how your view of a space and your view of your home has really shifted with this knowledge and practice and wisdom, and how those two things come together with someone's intention when they begin to work in this arena?
Yeah, I love that question. So one of the things that, so I pull so much from my own experience. Like I, you know, you've been in conversations with me. I rarely offer people advice or remedies or adjustments or suggestions that I have myself have not tried. And so, you know, going back to when I was brand new to feng shui, when I was the student, when I was the, you know, someone looking for a consultation, you know, I was frustrated with our home. There were a lot of things that didn't, that were just aggravating to me. And what I noticed is that initially, as I started just doing things, which initially I was doing things to help me, right? Like I was buying flowers because I thought it would help my wealth. I was painting walls because I thought it would help me feel better. Like there were things that I thought transactionally would benefit me immediately. But what I noticed was, as I started taking care of my home, it got easier to take care of my home. And somehow things did get simpler. You know, that doesn't mean that everything was easy street and all my problems went away and there was no growth to be had. It was just, I felt supported. I felt like when I was in a free fall, I didn't have to hit rock bottom. Like my house was showing up for me in a way. It was also triggering a lot of really cool opportunities. And in that moment, I thought, this is a partnership, right? So when we talk about what feng shui is, you know, the translation is wind, water. And I tell people all the time, wind is the energy that you don't see, you see the effects of. Water is the energy you do see. So water is you, it's your home, it's the things in your home. And that wind energy is everything that you don't see. So your goals, your intentions, your resolutions, the things that you're trying to manifest or create or experience. And that is what your home is holding. So it is in, this is the partnership, this is the conversation. So I started looking at our home as a member of our family. And then even becoming almost too tender about it in the way of thinking, you know, homes live so much longer than we do. You drive through these old neighborhoods and you hear stories about, you know, different time periods and what the neighborhood was like then and people who've passed on. These homes hold all of that history. And so when you start looking at it through that lens, there's a lot of love and respect we should be showing these places that we just call, you know, four walls and a roof. So I look at it as a co-creative partner. I look at it as a member of our family, and I look at it as an opportunity that's within our reach, literally at our fingertips, to start, you know, co-creating, actualizing, manifesting with, right? We do the mantras, we, you know, do the meditation, we, you know, take all of the classes, we invest in all these other places. And yet there's this resource that we come home to every single day that can really help, because where you live, where you work, your body, your brain is always under its influence. And so to disregard that just seems like a colossal waste of a really good opportunity.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, I think that one thing that's shifting in the wellness world is slowly is our vision of what ourselves is. You know, we're knowing from science that electron clouds are much bigger than we initially thought. They can travel many distances. Twins, for example, one of them can hurt a knee and the other one can feel knee pain. And there's all of these things that are starting to become more proven and more known about. And so just thinking, you know, when we're thinking about our overall wellness, not incorporating the space that we're dwelling, not having a relationship with that space feels exactly like a missed opportunity. And I just want to share real briefly, you know, this home that we're in now, as you know, was a little bit of a challenge when we first moved here, which you patiently and lovingly guided me through.
She just many needs a some love.
But, and I haven't told you this yet because we haven't connected about this yet, but I love this house now so much. I feel such a tenderness towards this home. I know it's idiosyncrasies. I know when I need to do a space clearing or when I need to move something. And I just have this really settled home feeling, even though it still has, there's some of those challenges that aren't really, you know, I could work with, but there are some structural things that are just there, you know? So this has been a really interesting experience for me of really getting to feel the words that you've said multiple times, which is that your house speaks to you when you start working with it. And watching that transform and watching that become. So it's really cool to see how that happens and how that works. So I'm just sharing that. There's not really a question there, but it just for everyone listening.
I love that though. I love that update. That's so exciting. And Here's the thing too. I think that, you know, we're fed so much perfectionism, you know, this ideal of like achieving excellence. And somehow it looks just like perfectionism, right? And so a lot of times, you know, people will wander or stumble into some feng shui and immediately assume based on the little few things that they've read that the space they have is all wrong. The feng shui is bad. They need to move out. And what I really encourage and invite people to consider is you never end up somewhere by accident. Like your home is there. When we talk about co-creative, I really, really want people to think it's not always about what you're going to get out of something. It is also what you're going to learn and earn. And your home is so primed to teach you those lessons, right? So when I was in my very first certification, I started realizing, oh my gosh, we have so many problems in our home. And the same thing, like maybe we should move. And I remember asking one of my teachers, can I responsibly sell our home knowing there are so many issues with it? How's that for some squishy boundaries trying to take care of the world? Anyway, and she said to me, and I'm so glad she said this because it would, like I said, it was very early on. She's like, when you've learned the lessons that you need to, you know, it'll be time for you to move on. And maybe that won't ever happen. Like maybe this is your house, you know, This is the co-creative partner for the rest of your life. But when you've learned those lessons, and if it's time to move on, you'll know, your house will help you know. And whoever comes in after you, it'll be their turn to learn those lessons. And it just was so freeing. And it really helped me sort of, you know, put into place like, oh, like this perfectionism thing isn't something that I need to be so concerned about. Like if I leave this house, what would I do? I would go try to find the perfect home. And guess what, people? I've never seen one. They just don't exist. Because like I said, everything that you're going through today is going to be different a year from now. It's going to be different 10 years from now. And so your home is always going to be needing a little tending and, you know, dosing of shui dependent on the weather and the circumstances and the expectations of you at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good. So true. And, you know, in this home, I feel like this home has thanked me. Like, I feel like this home feels like it's loved again and that this home wasn't loved for a long time. And I can feel that. And that enriches my life and my spirit. So it is this relationship that people can develop that can be very reciprocal in a way.
Yes.
So that's really cool. It's just really expansive to feel that way. So here's where I want to go next. So some of Feng Shui before encountering you felt very prescriptive. Like Here is the prescription. Good luck. And that reminds me, a lot of how I felt in certain medical systems. Like, you know, oh, you have this problem, which means this is what this is. So here's the prescription. And that works sometimes. Prescriptions work for a vast majority of people, right? That's why they exist. And I'm sure the same is true in feng shui, but it doesn't work 100% of the time. And so one of the things that I know you also lead with is that you lead with really understanding where your, who your client is, mm-hmm. what they love, what they need, and adjusting your prescriptions for that person. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the sort of prescriptive nature and how you've managed to kind of free that up for yourself and your clients and your students.
So, you know, we just were talking about it. You kind of touched on it when you were talking about your home and how you feel like you've loved it and it's so happy. And, you know, going back to that idea of this wind, water, this conversation you're in with your space, right? You are an energy that's making deposits in your space. Your home is soaking it up. And then guess what? It's an energy. So it's giving it back off. So there's always this tango happening, right? That's why you can do something in your space and feel better. And also how your space can help lift you up when you've had a bad day and you come home, right? So it's, you're always in conversation. And so, you know, when we work off of fear-based feng shui, and there's a lot of it. And again, it's, you know, I tell people, I don't ever subscribe to like there's one approach or one school of feng shui that's more correct. Very early on, I got bullied by some of the feng shui practitioners of old about not being legit, which, you know, made me study harder, made me go deeper. And what I came out of it was most people don't even get the simple stuff right. So why are we trying to be so esoteric? That just feels, you know, mean, spirited. But also if someone is scared, if someone is fearful, that's the energy they're giving off in their space. And so it doesn't matter if you put all of the remedies and cures and adjustments in place, if they feel that something is wrong and they've heard some of that fear-based language, they can't get over it. Fear is a very hard thing to expect people to just hurdle. And then you add to it people's tendencies towards anxiety or, you know, being a little too focused on the bad and not necessarily focusing on what's good. You know, you look at just human nature and it's a lot to ask people. So what I realized again early on and why I continue, you know, to just study and learn more is you gotta always have options. It's good to give people options. It's one thing to come in and say, okay, here's what's going to remedy this. But it's a whole nother thing if you already have someone who's resistant to feng shui in general, or you have someone who, like I said, is really prone to anxiety or depression, and you're telling them something's wrong in their space, and you know that's just going to stick, you know, to whatever they're already managing. It's another thing if what you're trying to prescribe doesn't even work in their space. You got to have options. And when I started realizing, oh, there are a lot of different ways to approach this, same answer I give people when they ask me about which school is more correct. There are several paths up the same mountain and they all get you there. If you have a client who's, you know, experiencing something or asking you to help them with some sort of splinter, it's a good idea to have a toolbox with a few different options so that we can work with the one that feels most congruent and hopeful to them, because you're trying to create momentum. Now, does this mean that in some situations I'm just going to ignore a glaring problem? No, but I might wade us into it. Let them experience some smaller wins before we go through something bigger. And I'm always going to be mindful of sort of their ability to handle and process the information. So that really is how I approach this. I just don't believe in scaring people. I don't believe in making people feel inadequate or like they are in a corner and they're only given one choice. And if they don't do that, and again, I have that belief. And then I've also had the experience of managing people who are like, you know what, Amanda, I really want to work with Flying Stars Feng Shui this year. And that is, you know, you have four directions of your house that aren't great. And then, you know, the others are totally fine. Managing people through that is a whole situation. Everyone thinks they're like, I'm just going to put the remedies in place. I'm going to be cool. They're not.
Yes. Well, that is brings up another thing, which I think is really topical is the right word, which is manifesting is super hot, right? Everyone wants, you know, think mm-hmm. it and it's going to happen. Think it, right. Think it and it's going to happen. And what I love about feng shui is that it brings in the rule of action.
Yes.
And so, you know, just placing a rose quartz in your love gua isn't going to bring in the person of your dreams.
Imagine that. Yeah.
We'd all be. Well,
joke. Perfect. If it were that easy, I'd be a billionaire. Come on.
Yeah,
people.
You would. Or you'd have to work a lot less. Both probably.
I'd be at the top of the mountain, people hiking up to see me.
here's a rose quartz. See you later. But I think that that's also another misconception that people have, that it's just going to be a bunch of stuff that they're going to place around their house, or they're going to move their furniture and throw their hands up. And, you know, I can't remember which class, I've taken several of your classes, this was where you talked about the percentages. There's a percentage that's you. Oh. There's a percentage that's, if you could run us through that, because I think that that can help people sort of who might be in this all or nothing mentality, like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, do all this stuff and then I don't have to do anything else. But talk a little bit, if you would, about those percentages and how that factors into this sort of mentality of just manifesting from your doing one thing.
Yeah. So let me just say this, just in terms of like bringing stuff in, all of those things are welcome in your home.
Right.
It's when we co-opt the responsibility onto them. And what right. I mean co-opt is, it's like, okay, I bought the rose quartz, so now Mr. Perfect is supposed to show up. Right. Here's the thing. All of those things energetically do shift energy,
right?
But how they shift energy is not your domain. Your domain is answering the assignment, showing up for the opportunity it triggers. And so if you remember earlier, I said, you know, we get sometimes the other end of that spectrum is we tend to strangle the how, the details, it needs to look like this. And if it doesn't look exactly like I have in my mind, then it must be wrong. No, 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 no. Feng Shui will trigger opportunities. But when we hear opportunities, this is when people tend to be super optimistic. Like, oh, it's just going to be good stuff. Mm-hmm. If you got some work that you've been putting off, or there's some things that you need to clean up that are blocking that passage for what you want to get to you, you're going to have to address that. So it might make working through that more efficient, but it's not going to remove it, right? So the co-opting is really one of the things I encourage people to be mindful of. My other favorite example of it is when someone buys a smoke bundle and they go through and they're like, I'm getting rid of all the bad energy, but the house is dirty. The, you know, curtains aren't open. There's dust or clutter everywhere. And it's like, well, wait a second. Are you preparing the space? Like, I get what this is doing, but are you actually preparing the space? You know, you can't chase off energy that has gotten itself comfy. You know,
and like nowhere to go.
right. So it's like, again, it's just really understanding that there's a lot of opportunity here, right? So maybe even before you get the smoke bundle, just a really good cleanse of your space, physical cleanse, could change your life. I mean, truly. All right. So to answer the question you asked me, yes. When you're looking at feng shui, one of the things that I think people don't know about as much are the three types of luck that we talk about. So earth luck is really that where feng shui happens. It's where you have control and sort of influence over your environment and what's happening. This is where all of the remedies and adjustments and suggestions and tips that you pick up really work. And that's like 33% of it. So, hey, 33% of it is working, you know, under your little umbrella. Then you have man or woman luck. I call it woman luck just so it's not all man luck, but you know, this is you, this is your intentions. It's what, how you're showing up, your education, what you're putting into it. Again, 33%. So you have some influence over it. But you know, that is totally what you choose to make of it. Then you have the heaven luck, which is your astrology and all of the things that, you know, it's sort of more fate, right? But that doesn't mean you don't have any control. It just means that you might need to read the weather patterns so you know what you're going into, right? So when people try feng shui and they're like, well, it didn't work, I'm really curious about the other 66%.
Yeah.
And that's where I'll meet people. Like, so talk to me about.
Right. And that's what it, you know, that is where sort of the realm of personal responsibility and taking responsibility for your actions and looking a little deeper into what's going on, into going back to the beginning of our conversation, your intention and all of those things come into play. So it's, I think, you know, in the realm of health and wellness, that's just a really important factor. Again, you know, this conversation is helping us expand our vision of what it means to take care of ourselves by inviting our home into that process. And so I'm curious, in your own life, working with the 30, I'm assuming you sort of started in a way with the feng shui 33%, right? how did, or not really, no.
Well, I was thinking, you know, I was sort of into that intention, like, okay, what am I bringing to the day? Like recognizing, okay, I not seeing that my house was responsible for it yet, but realizing, okay, I've sort of become like a buzzkill. I'm so frustrated by everything. I've got toddlers. Like, I'm not a happy person. So if you were to, and I'm just like, if we were to get my journals back out from then, you would see I was really focused. I mean, a lot of these books back here, like How to Be Happy, you know, what is that secret ingredient? And it's not even happy, because happy just feels like, you know, an impossible state to maintain, but contentment. Like, where am I going to feel the most peace of mind? And so a lot of effort was spent studying that, and then fell, you know, into my lap feng shui. And so then it was like, okay, starting to take care of the space and the little things. One of the biggest ahas I had was, you know, when I came to feng shui, there were a lot of, like I said, a lot of challenges. And one of them was, even though we were making more money, it seemed like money was going out so much more quickly. And I couldn't figure out how that was happening. And of course, the cost of living, all those things contributed. But so wealth was what kind of, all right, let's see what it's made of. Let's see if this feng shui can really give me, you know, results. And I noticed that all of the suggestions, the simple ones, were where I had a lot of resistance, right? And so when I talk to people about buying flowers, you know, and I talk about that a lot, people are like, oh, they just die too quickly. They're too expensive. I can't. Okay. So there it is. There it is. There's your speed bump. There's your roadblock. Okay. So I don't care whether you buy the flowers or not, but where are you holding out on bringing some indulgence, bringing some, you know, I deserve this into your life? There's a Chinese proverb I love that says, if you only have, I can't remember the, like, if you only have two pennies, buy a loaf of bread with one and a lily with the other, something like that. It's not exact, but to me, it's like, there's this sustenance and then there's the beauty, the soul that, you know, and that for me is everything. So when I started acknowledging where the resistance was coming from, I could see how I was contributing, right? So there was the bringing the flowers in, but there was also the part of me having to work on, it's okay. Like, this is not wasteful. This is really celebrating life in the moment and being appreciative of this moment. That's where most of our power resides anyway, right? But it's, we get in this future tripping. We get into this past experiences. Well, that won't be worth it, or whatever we were raised with. And so there's a lot of that that I think feng shui can open you up to exploring. But yeah, those two definitely go together. And they were certainly very close in my evolution, but I was working on the happy piece just a little bit before.
No, that makes so much sense. And it reminds me of a couple of things. One of which is that, you know, let's say someone wants to bring in a partner. I know from experience with you that often you don't actually work in that area. You work in the partner to that area's area. Yeah. And I think that that's, you know, in terms of when we're talking about health, a lot of times, you know, for example, people come to me a lot of times because they want to lose weight. And I never start with losing weight. I start with a whole lot of other stuff. Yeah. And it's sort of the same thing you're saying, that feng shui can show you these blind spots that you have around your own worthiness, or maybe it is something with your health or something like that. So I'd love for you to just talk to people a little bit about how that works, like how working with a different area when you're trying to, say, manifest wealth, you know, how that comes into play.
Yeah. So you're talking about the Bagua map. And I think that people look at it, you know, there's nine life areas and they all have really concise titles. And we assume that that is what's on the table, right? You know, you've taken the classes. It goes so much more deep than that. But yeah, when someone comes to me and let's say they want love, okay, great. Let's talk about this. What is it you're looking for? What is it that what are your frustrations? Like, let's just get into the story of it. A lot of times what's missing is that self-awareness, that knowledge, that wisdom of what a good relationship or what hasn't worked in the past and what you're trying to move beyond so that you can attract what you really want. That conversation is needed. So when you look at the feng shui map, you'll see love and relationship, right, at the back, but at the you know, I say the back at the top of the map, if we're looking on a piece of paper at the top, you'll see love and relationship. At the bottom is that wisdom self-cultivation area. That's, you know, I want you to think of your home as like when you move in, these are the outer, like those first three areas, these are the outer spaces. These are the things that you take out into the world. And as you move through your life, you kind of go back into the, you know, spaces where you want to accumulate and hold on to that energy, right? The things that you're protecting. So you really do need that skills, that wisdom, that self-cultivation, that spirituality to create the relationship that you want. The metaphor that is most at home in the self-cultivation area too is the mountain, right? So if you think about a mountain having that wide base that you can sort of, you know, build upon, you know, as you reach those higher insights and that higher wisdom, it's really speaking to the power of what happens when you plummet your own soul. And a lot of times that's what's missing in the relationship. I joke a lot that love is the easiest thing to help people create. But when people aren't getting the results, a lot of times it's because they haven't addressed this part of their life yet. Mm. Like they haven't taken stock. They haven't taken time to reflect. They haven't, you know, really gotten intentional, you know, about whatever it is that needs to change. And I do see when I'm working with clients about this particularity, a lot of resistance. Again, going back to this is how it has to look. This is how it has to work. This is the chain of events that must lead to my end outcome. And so it really is, okay, where are you not trusting yourself? Where is like, what's trying to come up right now that you keep pushing down? Like, let's get into that. Because the minute we do, again, that clears the passage for what you want to find you.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It's just, it's hard to put into words how important that is and how relevant it is to pretty much any issue that one is working on, you know, really getting to the root and asking yourself that question. Like, if I want love, how can I work on this without working on it?
Is sort of, well, and how do I love myself?
Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah. How am I even loving myself? Am I looking for someone? I mean, that's such a great question is, you know, yeah, maybe you do the self-care well, but do you love yourself?
Right.
What do you really fancy about yourself? Like, fall in love with yourself and do that for a minute and then see where you get, right? Because again, it's changing your chi, it's changing your energy, and what you attract will change.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And just, you know, and if they can't get there, there's always somewhere else to go. And that's somewhere that I love. It's also something I love about feng shui is it's very gentle. There's always another layer to work with. You always have another option. You know that about you. Amanda's great at a long email. There's always another angle that you can take. And it doesn't view feng shui or my experience of you. There's nothing that's not workable. There's nothing... Yeah. And it's the same. That's the same how I feel about our wellness. Like, no matter where you're at, there's nothing that you can come to me with, or, you know, a good practitioner with, that isn't workable with and that cannot improve. There's no dead ends. There's no, you know, and if moving is a solution sometimes, but, you know, yeah. So that's really great. So thank you so much for reminding people of that and settling people into that. And I would be remiss having this wealth of genius on my podcast if I didn't give everyone listening a little bone here, throw them a little bone. So humor us, Amanda, as we're wrapping up towards the end here. So let's say somebody is working with a long-standing health challenge. This is something that they've been dealing with. It's not a life stopper. You know, they're not in bed. They're not, but it's just, it's nagging them. And it's something that, you know, they're having trouble making progress on. If you, this is a tough question, so I understand that. But if you had like one little feng shui bone, I always say feng shui, I don't know why, but feng shui bone to throw, what would you throw for that?
One.
I know it's a tough question for you. A simple one.
Do you know what I would say? I would say in some way, and this can be interpreted a lot of different ways, but change up the energy moving through your space. Sometimes when we feel like we're in a rut, when we feel like things have become too habitual, or we feel like just in general, nothing's changing, we're kind of bored. One of the great opportunities we have in our space is to move things around. This doesn't have to be furniture, although it's so funny. I grew up in a home where my mom loved to move furniture, and now I get it. She was just like, I need a change, and resources were always limited. So for her, that was a really great way to create that spark, right? So when we move things around, we are literally inviting energy to move through our home to nourish our spaces differently. It sounds so simple, but it is really significant. And you know, one of the ways I counter this when people are like, that's not good enough, you know, that won't work for me, is okay, legit, go into your kitchen today and move all of your drawers around. Move your silverware to a different drawer, move your towels to a different drawer, move everything. And then you see how long it takes you to get out of that autopilot. That's what energy is doing in your space. And really what happens is it just wakes you up a little differently. It forces you to pay attention a little differently. It engages you in your home differently. And those small upgrades are where I think the biggest wins live. So yeah, that's for really kind of trying to manage something that is chronic. That's a great way to bring in a new infusion of opportunities, energy, and even insights.
Not to mention all the dust you're going to uncover in that process.
Yeah. Well, right. And sometimes that's just like moving things around is like, okay, moving things out. Right. So I'll say to people, try moving 27 things around, and it doesn't have to be big. Right. I say you can move the couch a little to the left or a little to the right, but it can also be moving 27 things out. You know, sometimes when we get into these chronic states, it's because there are a lot of things that are lingering that we no longer have any sort of use, need, or desire for, and we've just let them get comfy. And allowing open space in your home is one of the most powerful things I know that we can do, because it sends a lot of pretty clear signals, like you're open to new ways of being, but it also creates room for you to receive whatever it is you're looking to call in.
Yeah. And I think receiving is something that when you're struggling with a chronic health issue sort of gets shut down, because the fear and fight or flight and all of the neurochemicals that are happening in the body kind of block that off, because you're just in survival mode. And there, you know, when you're in survival mode, there's not a lot of openness to receive. So it's really interesting that that's what you brought in. And I love that, because I'm sure that on another level, it's doing something to your brain as well, right? You mentioned moving things around in your kitchen. So what does that do to your brain? What new ideas are going to come to you just from your brain having to, not know that the knife is in the left drawer, instead it's in the right drawer? You know, maybe a new technique for working with your health will also come. So again, it's like, what's so amazing about this practice is not, to me, even the practice, it's what it opens up. It's the new ways of thinking and information that can come in when you incorporate this area of your life into your wellness. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, and it's really important to remember, and I didn't say this originally, a lot of people have been credited with it, so I don't know who to give credit to, but you know, when you see things differently, you see things differently. So really, when you shift things around, you know, you become so familiar with what you know that you don't even know what you don't know. And when you move things around, when you make physical, visual changes in your environment, what you see as you go out into the world literally changes. So when I say new insights, I don't mean just like whatever you're downloading. I mean, you actually start seeing things that have been right in front of you the whole time. It's such a powerful way to invite change, to invite opportunity into your life.
And who knows what fell behind the dresser that you're going to find too.
Dog
there's
toys.
That necklace.
Dog toys here always. I'm like, oh, there's that bone.
Yeah, there's a lot of hidden bones in our house too. Amazing. All right, Amanda, I thank you so much. This has been such an enriching conversation. I really appreciate you in my life. And before I let you go, I'm going to ask you the question that I ask everyone, which is, what does wellness mean to you?
I love that question. So I'm going to answer it the same way that I talk to people about organizing or clearing clutter. It's such a personal outcome every time. To me, wellness is peace of mind, you know, and it is energetically being able to show up in the ways that you want, right? So it's not about what anyone else subscribes or prescribes or dictates. I go into homes that are maximalist and they have great energy. I go into homes that are minimalist and don't. and vice versa, right? So it's always, it has to be a personal journey. It has to be what makes sense for you. And what we started this with, you know, you got to run the wisdom through your own filter. I think that's the most important thing. I think we have allowed a lot of people to take over making decisions for us. You know, we're in the season of the guru, right? Everyone's got an answer for us. And so we just pull up and take whatever they're serving. Don't remove yourself from the conversation, run it through your own filter. So for me, peace of mind and energetically being able to show up in the ways that I want is wellness.
Amazing. I love that answer so much. I agree. So thank you. And Amanda, is there anything else you want to let people know? All of the ways to contact Amanda are going to be linked to this podcast. I highly encourage you to follow her on Instagram. She does an amazing job. There is a ton of information there. She is incredibly generous with her knowledge. So follow Amanda on Instagram at
Amanda Gibby Peters.
Easy peasy. And yeah, anything else you want people to know about your work or what you're up to? I would just say, like,
if anyone wants to do, you know, you went through what was that group consult program where I took people through my process of my feng shui consult. It's actually going to become a self-study. And so I would, if you want to, you know, learn feng shui the way Cody did, I highly recommend, I would check out my site for that. It's a new program, Be Your Own Feng Shui Consultant. And so it'll be a 6-week classroom situation where you get all the modules, you get all the handouts, all that kind of stuff. And you'll learn feng shui in a way that feels really user-friendly and optimistic.
I can 100% attest to that. It is an amazing, amazing class. And yeah, Amanda, if there was one word I could ascribe to, it would be generous. So anything that you do with Amanda, she over delivers. So definitely check that out. Definitely check that out. And, follow along for all things Amanda. Thank you so much, Amanda. It was an absolute joy to have you here. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you, Cody. I enjoyed the conversation.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
A big thank you again to Amanda Gibby Peters of Simple Shui. You can connect with Amanda, sign up for her newsletter, grab her book Simple Shui for Every Day, and check out all of her current offerings on her website, simpleshui.com. Definitely give Amanda a follow on Instagram, where she shares so many tips, practices, and all things feng shui. Amanda also just launched her 6-week self-study course, Become Your Own Feng Shui Consultant, and her own podcast, House Therapy. All of this is linked for you in the show notes.
And a big thank you to you, my friends, for embarking on this path with me of exploring what it means to be well in this wacky world of ours. If you like this podcast, it would mean so much to me if you could take the time to subscribe, rate, review, and share it with some friends. To show my thanks, each month I'll be picking one reviewer at random to gift a complimentary VIP consultation and emotion code healing. I also have a few spots left in my highly discounted summer gut health program, so shoot me an email or DM on the socials if you feel like one of those spots might be yours. I'm excited to be with you again next week, same time, same place, otherwise known as every Wednesday. See you next time. Bye.